This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're talking about Trump's physical, not in an effort to either defend Trump and, you know, tell everybody there's nothing going on here, he's perfectly good health. Nor is it a snarky effort to suggest that Trump is on his last legs and he's ready to check out. And look, we might take some schadenfreude from that because his lifestyle is abysmal. I mean, according to reports, he delights in fast food. He flaunts his use of diet soda. He loves, all kinds of, gastronomic, abysmal stuff. And he eschews most exercise. In fact, it's reported that he has this theory that you only have a certain amount of reserve energy in your body. This is sort of a primitive theory of vitalism that kind of certain cultures, ancient cultures espoused, is that if you use up your energy, you're gonna die earlier, and that's sort of the opposite of use it or lose it, because I subscribe to the opposite viewpoint, which is that the energy begets energy, and the more I exercise, the more energy I get. But he sort of has. It's been reported he has the opposite view. So we might be sniping at him and saying, that he's going to get his just desserts. That's not an intended pun because of his abysmal lifestyle. But we got to look at the facts. And the facts are sometimes not conforming to a script. So let's look at precisely what's happening in his coronary arteries, according to something called the coronary artery or CAC scores, which really are better indicators of the presence of heart risk than something like cholesterol, because you're actually looking at calcium, which is a marker for atherosclerotic plaque. And interestingly, this test is called an Agatston score. And that name sounds a little vaguely familiar. Well, yes, Arthur Agatston is the author of the South Beach Diet. So this guy with a versatile career, on the one hand, he's a very, very, very highly published and renowned radiologist who developed this calcium scoring. And actually, he's a cardiologist, excuse me. But in conjunction with radiologists, he developed the scoring scheme and at the same time wrote a best-selling diet book. So these scores quantify the calcium associated with atherosclerotic plaque. Now, it's important to recognize that this is simply a quantity, but doesn't tell you whether it's a blockage. So a lot of patients say, well, after they do the test, I say, well, do I have a blockage? And the answer is, I can't tell. I can only give you a score from zero to the thousands that you have a certain amount of calcium distributed among your arteries. Now, they can assign whether the calcium is associated with one or another major artery, whether it's your right coronary artery or the left main coronary artery or the circumflex artery. They can sort of localize it, but they cannot tell you if there's a blockage. So paradoxically, you can have people with a relatively low score who have some stenosis, which is narrowing, and you can have people who have a high score where, all the calcium is distributed evenly and the blood flow is okay. But the higher the score, the more likely that there's going to be a blockage, which could be a critical narrowing, which could put people at risk for a heart attack. So here's how it goes. Trump had three of these. He started getting them in 2009. His score was 34. By 2013, his score was 98, and it's now 133. And that conforms to the usual trend of worsening scores over time. They do get worse. And I got to say, I don't think there's anything on God's earth that makes those scores better, frankly. But there is evidence that statins may slow that progression. And there's definitely a study that I've reported on here on this program. We did some podcast on aged garlic extract, brand named Kyolic. They sponsored some research that showed that when you add Kyolic, and the dosage is 2,400 milligrams a day, which is, it'll be four capsules a day. I'm sorry, it's 1,200 milligrams a day, which is four capsules a day. I think they're 300 milligram capsules of aged garlic extract. That when you add that to statins, it will reduce the rate of progression. But it's not going to make the plaque go away, because with age, they go away. And a simple analogy is, you know, those of you who live in snowy parts of the country, you know that sometimes it starts snowing and it takes a while for it to stick. You know, and it's just a little snow, it's not going to stick. The sidewalks will remain wet. Once it starts to stick, then the snow really starts to accumulate. And that's the way it is with coronary artery calcium. Once you lay down even a thin bed of coronary artery calcium, then there's a tendency for it to increase, sometimes at a very rapid rate. And it's the rate of increase is generally on the average of 25 to 30% a year. Now, well, you might be advised to have a stock or a bank account that yielded that kind of interest. And you can, you know, do a calculation and you can see what happens if that is unimpeded by, aged garlic extract or a better lifestyle, because it's going to accumulate and going to accumulate. And, if Trump has a score of 133 now, he may well have a score in the high hundreds or well over 1,000 if it progresses at this current rate. 34 in 2009, 98 in 2013, 133 now. It's going up, in 4 years, it's gone up 40%, nearly 40%. So, now, what does that mean, 133 score? Well, in my experience, it's unusual, but not entirely impossible for a relatively low score of 133 to connote a high degree of coronary artery blockage that could predict an immediate or an imminent heart attack. It's possible. I mean, the only good score is, I mean, certainly a score less than 25 is a good score, but the best score is zero, where if you have a score of zero, recent study suggested that once you get a score of zero, you got about a 10-15 year breather before you even have to think about cardiovascular disease. It's like a warranty, trouble-free mileage. And I recently undertook the test with a little apprehension because I didn't want bad news. I think of myself as being in excellent health and, you know, why do a test that could undermine that illusion? But luckily, my denial and illusion was corroborated by the fact that I had a zero score. So I was very happy to see that. In spite of the fact that I consume lots and lots of saturated fat and, usually at least two eggs per day. So I kind of am an outlier of the cholesterol hypothesis, as probably a lot of people are. Anyway, so back to Trump, 133 score. You can plug that score in to a calculator. It's the MESA calculator. And you can find the MESA calculator by Googling it. And then if you've had a coronary artery a EBT scan with a calcium score, you can plug yours in. And if we take Trump's score of 133, we find that he's in the 46th percentile. So that means that 45% of men are better than him, and 53%, that doesn't add up, are worse than him. So he's slightly better than average for a man his age. Now, that isn't great because a lot of 71-year-old men have heart disease. So it's not excellent. I wouldn't categorize, agree with Ronnie Jackson that that's excellent, but it does put him sort of right in the middle. And when you have a score of 101 to 400, and he has a score closer to 101 than to 400, that range is associated with a 13% chance of coronary artery narrowing. So he's got, you know, an 87% chance that he doesn't have any coronary artery narrowing. And the only way to be sure of that would be to do a test, which I don't recommend, highly unnecessary test, because he's asymptomatic. If he were to be symptomatic, if he should have chest pain or breathlessness or, you know, very abnormal EKG, yes, we would do an angiogram where you shoot dye via, usually via the femoral artery or femoral vein, into the heart, and then it shows whether there's blockage in the arteries. And unfortunately, that test, once it shows blockage, you're very likely to get a stent, often unnecessarily, according to many studies that suggest that asymptomatic men don't deserve to get those tests because it doesn't make a difference in outcomes. And yet, that test is often used as justification for using stents, which, according to studies, don't make a difference in outcomes, which are ultimately whether you're going to live or die or suffer cardiovascular disease. So it turns out that 85% of 71-year-old white males like Donald Trump have at least some plaque. So if he didn't have any plaque, he'd really be the exception. At my age of 65, I have zero plaque. Only 23% of white men have zero plaque like me. But if I were to preserve that status, that number would diminish. By the time I'm 71, if I had zero plaque, then only 15% of white men would have zero plaque. You can do another calculation that yields an arterial age of 76 for Trump. So he actually has older arteries than his chronological age. Now, I was pleased to see that when I did the plug-in, my arterial age is 39, which I jokingly referred to as the same as Jack Benny. But there's not that many people alive anymore who know who Jack Benny is, but he was a comedian who perpetually claimed he was 39. And that was, you know, in the old days of 1950s, 1960s TV. So much for that historical note. All right, so if we really wanted the scoop on Trump, what else would we do? Well, when I see a patient, you know, like, I mean, hypothetically, you know, again, this is a case study, and we're using this as kind of a discussion point. You know, Trump's not going to come see me, but let's say, you know, he comes in, I signs into the desk, Donald Trump, what would I do for him? I would do additional tests. I would look at his LDL, which is high, but I would fractionate it. I would look at the ratio of large to small particles. You can have a relatively high LDL, but it can be more good LDL than bad LDL. And we'd also measure the percentage of oxidized LDL, which is the more dangerous type of LDL. And we might have run a glucose tolerance test because even if they say he's not diabetic, by the way. I don't know if they revealed his hemoglobin A1C in the full revelations about his numbers, but they say he's not diabetic. But even when you're not diabetic, you might have a high insulin, you might have insulin resistance. A glucose tolerance test would, with an insulin determination, would yield that. And that's an early predictor of cardiometabolic disease. We might have looked at his ApoA to ApoB ratio. Those are carrier proteins in the blood that are pretty good predictors of cardiovascular disease, better than just random HDL and LDL. Homocysteine is a risk factor, especially for stroke, but also cardiovascular disease. That, I don't know whether that was done. One of the best tests for assessing risk of cardiovascular disease, and a way to discriminate, say you have a plaque score of 500. That could be okay or it could be not okay. That's pretty high. It's higher than Trump's. If you have a high C-reactive protein, it means that plaque is more likely to be inflammatory, and more likely to attract platelets, which can lead to a blood clot and a heart attack. So that, along with fibrinogen, is a measure of the likelihood of the blood to clot. LP little a, a risk factor for cardiovascular disease that's often uninvestigated, but it can be high and it can put you at higher risk even if you have a good cholesterol. We look at ratios of omega-3 to omega-6. If some people very low in omega-3, that's a very good predictor of cardiovascular risk. And we look at various vitamin and mineral levels. And there's more. We can really go into a very detailed cardiovascular evaluation. And then we might, and the purpose of that, why get all that data? Well, it's only valid if it gives you a benchmark against which you can measure your progress. Now, typically, patients who come to see me are not like Donald Trump, who want to eat whatever they want to eat with impunity and, brush off doctors' suggestions that they exercise, eat better, and lose weight. They're motivated, so we do a baseline test. And then we compare, maybe repeat some tests that are abnormal in 6 months and use those as a motivational tool. Here's a report card. You're doing better. This, that, and the other parameters improved. We're not doing so well on this one. We got to work a little harder. Keep taking your supplements. Exercise more. Be careful about those dietary lapses and so on. What I will say, though, is that, and this is an important reflection, health is more than the sum total of your test scores. There are some ineffable facts about longevity that defy categorization. An example of which is my own personal family. My grandfather, who ate high on the hog, he always used to take us to superb French restaurants, and ate the heaviest sauces, and smoked, and also maybe he was he was mellow and he wasn't stressed. He was one of the most stressed individuals that I've ever met. He, driving with him was a nightmare because he would be shouting and screaming at other drivers through the window in, three foreign languages. He had learned like six languages, of which none he had actually mastered. He was from the old country. And he lived to 101. Okay, well, he did give up cigarettes around in his 80s, and he took up cigars for a while, and then probably in his last 10 years, he stopped smoking altogether. But did he exercise? No. Exercise wasn't in vogue in those days. I mean, it was sort of a struggle for survival. So, what is interesting is that they've come up with a very, very sophisticated program utilizing artificial intelligence that is said to predict death, and it's been given FDA approval. It promises to predict your risk of dying. But, again, there's something elusive about that. And it is discussed in a very, very fine book called The Longevity Product that came out a few years ago. And it's the work of 8 decades by a researcher named Terman. And Terman tried to determine what is it about people that enable them to live a long time. And he concluded that it wasn't so much, smoking, certainly can take a toll. And, there are many lifestyle habits that statistically will put you at risk. But there, 1 + 1 + 1 doesn't necessarily equal 3. And that survival may be more predicated on certain personality characteristics like tenacity, which certainly my grandfather had, and extensive social and family ties, than on other, quote, healthy lifestyle practices that we traditionally define as healthy, like diet and exercise. So the other thing, and this is kind of funny, is that this physician endured a grilling. As Ronnie Jackson, Trump's physician, endured a grilling by reporters, highly skeptical reporters who are just shouting questions at him and say, well, how can Trump be healthy, when he's eating all the junk that he's eating? And so finally, in perhaps a little bit in a spirit of exasperation, Dr. Jackson deadpanned, it's genetic. And something to be said for that is that there is a genetic component to survival. Some people are bulletproof. And what indicates there may be a genetic component with Trump is that he's got a fairly high HDL, which is not so much a merit system, but is a genetic factor, is that, you know, if he exercised more, he'd raise his HDL. If he ate better, he might improve his HDL. But his HDL, in spite of all his poor lifestyle practices, 67. Two things, though, that are saving graces for Trump is he never smoked, and he never took drugs, and he doesn't drink, and he never drank. And that may be, there may be some real longevity influences associated with those forms of abstinence. On another note, they tried to assess, Trump, he comes out with some real doozies. And so the people have, and again, this is politically motivated. You know, it's like if you're a staunch Republican, you say, well, this guy's the greatest thing next to mom's apple pie. And if you're a devoted progressive or left winger, you're going to say, this guy is a nut and he's demented. Demented is not the same as having a psychiatric disorder. It is a prelude to, Alzheimer's disease or age-related cognitive decline. But his erratic behavior is less likely to be explained by dementia because he aced the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, which is a test that you can undertake on your own. I suggest you take a look at it. See if you can get all 30 right like he did. Because it's actually a little bit of a challenging test. Some of it's drawing, draw a clock, draw a figure. Some of it's memory tasks. Some of it's, basic logic, like these three things. What are they? Are they the same category of things? And it's like apple, pineapple, cherry, So, I mean, a person with a cognitive problem might have difficulty with that. Some of these things are pretty easy for cognitively intact people, but, throw people with cognitive decline for a loop. Finally, in this era of unprecedented disclosure and scrutiny, it's interesting to note that Trump's health issues are hardly a White House novelty. Two presidents had heart attacks that we know of, Eisenhower and Warren Harding. He died in office. I believe it was in the 1920s. And Lyndon Johnson has said by some to have suffered a heart attack while in office, but it was never really disclosed. And soon after leaving office, he died. And how would you say Lyndon Johnson was when he died? I'd say guy was in his 70s, looked pretty haggard. He was 64. He was 7 years younger than Trump. Two presidents had strokes. Woodrow Wilson, as I mentioned earlier, and FDR had an aneurysm. And how old was FDR? And you see pictures of him towards the end of the presidency and after, leading the country through the Depression and through World War II, and he looked haggard and ashen and very, very devitalized towards the end with big, big bags under his eyes, ashen complexion. How old do you think he was? Well, I also would have guessed in his 70s, but historically, it's verified that he died at 64. Obesity is not a novelty in the White House. William Howard Taft was 5'11", and he weighed in at 340 pounds at the end of his presidency. He fought weight problems throughout, gained and lost. He had a BMI of 47, as compared to Trump's relatively petite BMI of 29.9. So this is nothing new. But of interest is, when you're trying to predict whether a president is going to live or die, and this is a grim topic, but I've got to go here, is actuarially speaking, if you wanted to handicap the president's statistical likelihood of surviving through a presidency, we got to look at an overlooked fact, which is that four presidents have been murdered in office. They've been assassinated. Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, and Kennedy. I mean, I think probably a lot of Americans don't realize that it wasn't just Lincoln and Kennedy, but intervening, two other presidents were killed. And there's, being the 45th president of the United States, that equates to a 9% risk of not living through a term in office. So, wow. So, you know, we try to prognosticate, and then life comes at us sideways. We cannot really sometimes predict the time or cause of our demise. That's the hardest thing in the world to anticipate. So, you know, I hope that this discussion has shed a little light on risk assessment, because we can use the president's recent physical as a case study of sorts in evaluating these kinds of issues. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.